College football nerds here talking Oklahoma preview for 2021. And we did do a discussion on Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC. I know y'all are probably, y'all have seen videos left and right on that. But if you haven't seen ours yet, it's clearly the best one. So you need to check it out. It's in the description. We'll link it down there and you can go check it out after you watch this one. Two things for y'all. One, let us know what you think Oklahoma's record is going to be this year. And really, if you're an Oklahoma fan, give us the game that concerns you the most, or give us the something about your team that concerns you the most. Number two, if you like this, share this content wherever you go after you leave here. After you leave a comment, after you mix it up in the comment section, help us out a ton. Twitter, Facebook, if you're on a forum, link us there. It'll help us out a lot. All right, Josh, talking about Oklahoma, you and I both were discussing this as we got this rolling, kind of where we have Oklahoma this year. I might have them number one. We'll do a top 25, a preseason top 25. I might have them number one. I'm super high on them. I'm probably the highest I've been on them in the last 5 years. And for me, what I always said in 2018 was, you've got the best offense in college football history. And Oklahoma fans didn't like this. I would say, you've got the best offense literally that I've ever seen. But you've got one of the worst defenses I've ever seen on a top five, top 10 team ever. And I hope Oklahoma fans can appreciate that that was just keeping it real. We weren't dogging their team. That was just reality. The numbers kind of, they would bear that out over the course of the season. And we saw a little bit of trouble, obviously, in 2019 as well. I don't think this is the same Oklahoma team. And a lot of people are going to feel that way. A lot of people that don't follow Oklahoma a lot this year or haven't in the past are going to see Oklahoma moonwalk through this easy schedule. And we'll talk about that later. It's not their fault. It's not Oklahoma's fault. It's easier. Easy. We'll talk about it. They're going to see them moonwalk through this thing and say, yeah. Well, we've seen this before. They're going to get in the playoffs and they're going to choke. Or they're going to see Oklahoma maybe give up some points. Talk a little bit about how, about what we said all along. Maybe give an example of how Oklahoma, with an offense this good, they don't have to be elite on defense, just not the worst defense we've ever seen.
We talked about this a lot several years ago. It wasn't just that Oklahoma's defense was bad, like in 2018. I think they were 108th in the country bad. If Oklahoma had been putting forward units that are 40th in the country, 50th in the country, they would be a top-end team. And last year, we talked about even going into the Florida game, as much as they improved, they weren't a top-five defense. And a lot of the metrics we looked at, they were more like, I don't know, a top 20 defense. And that's enough. You know, yards per play for Oklahoma in 2020. Oklahoma, you know, are they top 10? No. Are they top 20? No, not really. Yards per play, they were 26th. And 26th in the country. And not, and we're not talking total yards, right? Doesn't matter what your tempo is. We're talking yards per play. 26 is enough to win a national title at Oklahoma with how good your offense is. Because you know who else wasn't a top 15 defense? Alabama. You know who else wasn't? Clemson. You know who else wasn't? Ohio State. None of these teams are fielding top 10, top 15 defenses given the style of offense that's being played. In fact, they're almost all G5s in the top of that tier. And the reason for that is they're playing other G5 teams, and you can shut them down. You can't shut down teams with five-star receivers anymore in the RPO era. I just want to see them be solidly good. And I know the offense is going to be good. So if they can turn that corner, I think Oklahoma has every chance to be a team that isn't just trying to make it into the playoffs to lose badly in the first round, but being a team that gets in the playoffs and actually gives somebody a run for their money or wins the game. And you know what? It was just 4 years ago in 2017 when they darn near won the semifinal against a Georgia team that darn near beat Alabama. They were just as good as either team that won the championship that year. And I think we've forgotten that. And if they just get a little bit more defensive play, they're going to be right back in the thick of it and very easily could be playing for a national title this year.
Yeah, and that's what I talk – when I talk about like the casual fan or the fan that hasn't really followed Oklahoma, they're maybe not going to understand that. And they're just going to wait for the other shoe to drop in the playoffs, and they don't realize that, one – 2019 Oklahoma defense was a little bit better than 2018. Like, there was this gradual progression into 2020 that where they really, really improved. 2019 defense was a little bit better, but we saw when you have a massive drop off offensively, because Jalen Hurts, for all the things we like about him, that offense led by Jalen Hurts was not on the level of 2018 or 2020 or what we're going to have in 21. And so you kind of had the worst of both worlds. You didn't have a team that could keep the ball moving to keep it away from the other team, and that other team can exploit your weak defense. This year, I don't think it's going to be the case. I think that, and you can get into this a little bit, I think the big thing is they're not losing a ton of people. And I know we went back and forth with Oklahoma fans last year about Ramondre Stevenson, and we were high but not super high on him, and we didn't get sing the praises that they maybe wanted us to, but we know running backs. And I said, and you said, when Trey Sermon went to Ohio State, he was going to be a dude. We were really excited about him at Ohio State. I don't know why he left Oklahoma, but I feel similarly about Eric Gray at Oklahoma. I loved him at Tennessee because he had no help around him, and he was still having games left and right. I think he had one against Alabama last year. So I don't think they've got huge losses, especially like you lose two corners that were good, not great, and they didn't get high drafted. So maybe go into that a little bit when you your sort of philosophy on when you lose guys, but they weren't super high draft picks. Maybe it's not that big of a loss, and even though you got new faces, you maybe don't need to be that concerned.
Yeah. So last year, Oklahoma lost a few people to the NFL. You lose Perkins, you lose Brown, you lose Norwood. And a lot of Oklahoma fans, it was kind of funny when Perkins came back, told us that was the missing piece, and that's why their defense was great. We didn't say their defense was terrible, but neither one of us ever would buy into this theory that Perkins coming back and playing in the roster the second half is what suddenly made Oklahoma a good team. There's kind of an irony in it, because the same way I didn't buy that then means I don't necessarily buy that he's going to destroy the team now. And he wasn't a first-round draft pick, right? He went a couple, you know, went into those second, what was he? I can't remember, second or third-round draft pick. I'm forgetting off the top of my head. And then you had others in Trey Brown and Norwood, who I believe were fourth and second, seventh round, if memory serves. And they were kind of, you know, your star offensive players. And I've always said when you have a defense that loses a bunch of guys that go a lot higher than you expect, it's a bad sign. It means you've lost more than you expected you did, and it means the coaching staff sort of underachieved. The big example of that to me was 2019 LSU. They had a bunch of first-round draft pick players. I mean, the first two rounds of that season, just LSU guy after LSU guy. It was the most NFL draft picks of any college champion ever. And not just that, but the number of first-round guys, especially on defense, like Queen at linebacker from LSU. And I don't want to get off on a tangent, but it's a bad sign when those guys go in the first round because they weren't a great defense. Oklahoma improved a ton, and when you had your studs go pro, they're going in the fourth round. They're going in the third round, the seventh round. That should make you feel a little more at ease, because I think we were right to say that Perkins was not the best pass rusher in college football. He was merely a good one. And when you lose guys that are merely good or merely NFL caliber, you can replace them with other guys that are going to be NFL caliber. And it's hard to judge Oklahoma because there's a lot of returning talent, but there's also some turnover hidden in that. Obviously, the secondary, you have Brendan Radley Hiles that gets transferred out. You got DJ Graham, who's sort of emerging. You got other guys like Key Lawrence transferring in from Tennessee. I don't really know what this team's going to look like. I mean, Oklahoma, I counted it up. There were 25. I mean, you get 85 guys on the roster, 25 players in and out of that team. And so it's going to look pretty different. And a lot of those guys were backups being replaced by starters, but it's hard to judge. But my big thing with that is really just, when you're losing guys third, fourth, seventh round, what have you, you can replace them. If you're a high-level team, you can replace them. And especially we see a lot with Clemsons and the Alabamas and the Georgias. Everybody wants to make fun of them on draft day when they slip down and they don't go as high as people think they're going to go. But by and large, when Alabama has a disappointing draft, they're a monster the next year, and they often win the title. And there's a reason for that, and it's because they didn't lose as much as people think. The problem for Oklahoma, and this, you know, we had a whole discussion on Oklahoma, Texas, and what it means for the SEC, but maybe this is a time to talk about it a little bit for Oklahoma. Their problem is replacing NFL caliber players with NFL caliber players, given their recruiting, isn't necessarily a given. But the standard they're playing against is such that replacing a fourth round guy with a fifth round guy stands out. Whereas it shouldn't really stand out if you're playing in a playoff caliber conference or playing against playoff caliber competition. And I'm still not really sure how much of an answer we're going to get to that this year. Like, I think the guys are good enough, but I don't know your thoughts on it. I just don't know how much the schedule is going to really show it.
Yeah, and it's tough because I said earlier in the show, like, I don't blame Oklahoma for this. They scheduled Nebraska in 2016. You do these schedules way in advance. You hope the team is good. You schedule brand names. Oklahoma schedules brand names like UCLA and Nebraska, and they stink. That's not Oklahoma's fault. And Oklahoma didn't get any credit for beating UCLA, and they really shouldn't because they weren't great, but they should get credit for scheduling them, and that's the difference. So they've already got 9 P5s on the schedule, and then they go out and schedule a 10th in Nebraska, and they start with Tulane, Western Carolina. I hate that those two games are first. Like, if you're going to have a week schedule, I would at least like to have the name brand in week one. But whatever. Looking at their schedule, they might have two top 25 teams on it this year. They might. Just because of how math works out within a conference, somebody's got to have a winning record. You're playing everybody in the conference. I'm not super sold on Iowa State. None of this, by the way, is any indictment on Oklahoma. I'm not sold on Iowa State. I think they're a little overrated. I think they weren't that great last year. They play Iowa every year. There's no way to know based on how they are out of conference. Like, there's no data points there. It's really frustrating. I don't think Texas is going to be great this year. I think next year is the year that they'll really show improvement. There's just too much to unravel there to be good in 1 year. I think that Oklahoma might moonwalk this schedule, go into the playoffs, and people think, yeah, same Oklahoma, and then they end up murdering somebody in round one. I think that's very much a possibility. The flip side of that is they may not get challenged very much. But look, Clemson plays nobody every year, and they end up winning playoff games, winning national championships. It's not their fault that the ACC sucks. Clemson's doing their part. They just got to show up in the playoffs. And to you, I'll put this question to you as we wind it down. Do you think it's better to have that grueling SEC West-style schedule and be battle-tested, or do you think it's better to come into the playoffs healthy and maybe have your game really fine-tuned without a lot of struggle through a season?
I think it's generally better for an independent team, or better for a team independently, looking at it that way, to have the cakewalk schedule, because you're a lot more likely to come in healthy. You're a lot more likely to, you can hold stuff back and you can come in and play well. The thing when you have a really hard conference that I think sometimes people have a hard time wrapping around is if you got like 2019 SEC, and you got LSU and Alabama, and there are a couple other schools that are pretty good, like Georgia that year, somebody was going to end up being healthy at the end of the season. It happened to be LSU. If LSU had the injuries Alabama had, Alabama would have been in the national title and not LSU that year. I'm pretty confident in that, given how decimated Alabama was and how healthy LSU was. But somebody comes out of it, and that team is going to be battle-tested and hardened, and they're a juggernaut. And that makes a conference hard to beat in the playoff. But it doesn't make a team hard to beat, because you still can be the Alabama in that situation where they were playing third-string linemen by the time they played the Iron Bowl that season. You don't want that schedule. As an individual team, you don't want it. You want your conference to have it, but you don't want your team to have it. And so Oklahoma is in an envious position because they can go in and then they can be 2018 Clemson, right? That sleptwalked through their whole schedule, get an Alabama who did end up being banged up from a long season, really had a very easy schedule. Nobody, truth be told, Clemson takes a lot of heat that year, but 2018 was not a very good year for the SEC either. And Alabama wasn't particularly tested themselves, but they were kind of banged up because it was a harder schedule and they end up losing. I'm with you. I think Oklahoma could really shock some people. And I'm not sure where they're at, but they're probably going to be a top three team. It's one of those three slots for me, too. And there's a lot of stuff we haven't even talked about, right? I mean, obviously they're known for offense. We barely touched on it. We talked about Gray. The offensive line should be great. They bring in a guy from Tennessee that was a former five-star. The receiving core lost Hazelwood early last year. He's back. I mean, Mims and Weeps are good receivers, but they're not Hollywood Brown, frankly. But in Mike Woods and Mario Williams and Jaden Hazelwood, you might have a Hollywood Brown or two. You might have a CeeDee Lamb. I think they're going to be better offensively than they were last year.
The kid from Arkansas really was pretty good too, right?
Yeah, Mike Woods from Arkansas was a stud. A stud, if you don't know how good he was. Day one, pretty much there. And again, I thought Stevenson brought stability to the running back position, but I didn't really think he was a playmaker. And I'm not sure Gray isn't an upgrade. So all around, I don't really see any major weaknesses on this team. My only concern is, as we go through the year and you hear me talk about it, I'm going to probably expect them to win the conference all year. And I am never going to really know how good they are, even if they're blowing the doors off some people. Unless they just do it every week on both sides of the ball, I'm going to be skeptical. Just because of their competition, not because of Oklahoma. The one thing relative to this year I will say is the secondary does have a lot of changing pieces. And I'll be blunt, the secondary has not played well historically at Oklahoma under Lincoln Riley. They've been discombobulated, missing tackles. I'll be curious with just having a lot of new pieces if Grinch is able to sort of solve that piece of the puzzle. And I think if they do, then they're absolutely going to be a team to be reckoned with this year.
Yeah, and I think there's an opportunity here. One of the things that people don't understand that's hard with an easy schedule is to consist, and you touched on a little bit, is to consistently murder people. And that's what Oklahoma hasn't done in the past. They haven't even consistently beaten everybody they should. Kansas State, Iowa State, cough, cough, cough. So if they murder everybody, then we'll have a little bit of an indicator going into the playoffs that is this is a different Oklahoma team. People give like Alabama teams and Clemson teams a hard time. They're like, how many ranked teams have you played? I don't care how many teams ranked number 19 Alabama's played because they beat those teams by four touchdowns. To me, it's far more impressive to beat everybody by 30 points on a week schedule. Like G5 teams like UCF 2017, they didn't do that. They had three one-score games that year with the 103rd toughest schedule in the country. So if Oklahoma can consistently kill people, to me that speaks to a mindset that they haven't had in the past and that it will show that there's a more premium team coming to the playoffs. The other thing you talked about real quickly that I want to touch on is the ability to hold stuff back. Clemson did it in 2018. They were a run-heavy team coming into that Alabama game, and then they were bombs away, and it had not been shown on tape. Ohio State, because of 2020 and COVID and all of that, Ohio State last year, they had like one game in 5 or 6 weeks leading up to the Clemson game. I will go to my grave believing that they started that 5 weeks early prepping for Clemson, held a lot of stuff back, and Clemson faced a team that was not on tape all season. Oklahoma can do that. So for me, I'm very high on them. I'm curious to see if they can keep up that consistency throughout the course of the year because it's very hard, even with an easy schedule. So that's it for me. Why don't you kind of wind us down and close us out on this one since I normally close us out. And give me your overall thoughts on what it's going to take. We said this with our interview with RJ, I think it was 3 years ago. What it's going to take this year for Oklahoma to be different and get over the hump and close us out.
Well, I'll start with the same thing I said 3 years ago with RJ, which is first, it's a little unfair when getting over the hump is winning a national title. Because there are only really two teams that have gotten to the hump. And that's Oklahoma and Georgia, to fail to get over that hump. Texas would kill to be at this hump. Florida would kill to be at this hump. So first off, yeah, just not being Georgia, not being Alabama and Clemson kind of makes it unfair. But to get over it, you really have to be consistently great. Like Daniel's talking about, you've got to be able to beat teams by a large margin on a consistent basis. Because that's what Alabama and Clemson do. And yeah, they have an occasional close game. But then everybody just sort of ignores it when they play a top 15 team. Like Alabama, Texas A&M last year. Who remembers that game? Do people realize that Alabama was up like 41-17 midway through the third quarter on Texas A&M? It just gets forgotten about because they do it so much to so many high-level teams. and we only pay attention to the like one top 15 team that kind of gives them a game, that's the kind of team that wins a playoff. And I need to see Oklahoma do that on a consistent basis. And in particular, we're not going to do a preview on them, I'm pretty confident. I don't think Iowa State is the seventh best team in the country. And last year, Oklahoma had two one-score games with Iowa State. And if you want to be a national champion team, you need to be beating Iowa State soundly, because the teams that are going to win a title aren't going to be in close games with Iowa State. Iowa State is going to be kind of beneath them. Just sheer talent, no matter how good Iowa State is overall, a top-end elite championship team will destroy an Iowa State, because they just can isolate players and blow by them. And they will get in the backfield, and the lack of athleticism just takes over. You see it with Wisconsin, even in their better seasons, all the time. That's what I need to see from Oklahoma to see them get over the hump. And I would just say, play in the national title game. I don't even care if you win it, but just play in the national title game, win that opening playoff game, and show that really what you have is the talent and depth to compete at that level.